Okay, Good Closer Sales 101, session 2, personas. So in the first session, we talked about the asset management industry. We talked about the different types of asset management entity. We talked about how capital flowed into those entities. And we rounded out by explaining where the money comes from and how important it is that that capital is appropriately sold to by the distribution organisations within these asset managers, the importance of working hand-in-hand with advisors and other institutions to facilitate that flow of capital. So what we're going to do now is talk a little bit about the different types of people within an asset manager that we tend to sell to. What are their goals in their organisation? What are their fears? How do they fit into this kind of larger picture? Because, of course, these are the people that you're going to be talking to. So, again, we work at the moment pretty much exclusively with mutual fund managers in the future. And maybe you're listening to this in the future. We may have already gone into other alternatives. I'm definitely not going to redo these lessons. So you may well find that the list of client types that we go after are slightly different. And, of course, there'll be another session on that. But focusing on the mutual fund industry now, we're really talking about a couple of different groups of people within the business that either directly participate in product distribution, sale of funds, or support it. So funnily enough, the first and most important group that we talk to are the marketing teams, because they're the people that create the content to support the sales teams. And so marketing organization within an asset manager, it's not the same type of marketing organization that you might expect to find in, say, a consumer internet company or a consumer packaged goods company. A lot of their job is about making sure that the right investment content is put together. Now, of course, how that content is positioned and how their thought leadership is marketed is important, because awareness, brand awareness, is critical in making sure that people know who you are, gravitate towards your products, align with your values, etc., etc. But a big part of the job of the marketing team is to put together investment-related content. The top of the tree is the chief marketing officer, maybe also termed the VP of marketing, but they are generally reporting into either the head of distribution or into the CEO of the asset manager. You may find, depending on the type of asset manager you're dealing with, if it's bank-owned, that a CEO of that asset manager also rolls up into the CEO of the bank. But if you have independent asset managers, they're going to be, as a CMO, one, maybe two rungs below the top of the tree. So they're pretty senior. Then they may have reports into them that deal with different parts of the marketing estate. So very common nowadays to have a head of digital reporting into the chief marketing officer. And of course, the head of digital will be responsible for all digital marketing endeavors. You may have a head of brand. So perhaps coming from a more traditional marketing background. And again, depending on the structure that they've chosen to pursue, you may also have a head of client reporting. That head of client reporting may also report into a chief operating officer. It really depends on the structure of the firm, because of course client reporting may be considered to be something that is more client focused or operationally focused. So again, it depends on structure. But what does a marketing team typically do? What are they responsible for, and how are they kind of aligned with what we do and what that asset manager is trying to do? So the CMO is typically going to have responsibility for getting the brand message out. So the mission of the company, what are they good at, where do they fit in the world, how should people think about them. And of course they're going to be doing that through, you know, a bunch of pretty standard types of avenues. So they'll put ads at Luxembourg Airport, see Luxembourg being a big hub for the funds industry. They're going to buy advertising on different industry websites. They're going to buy advertising in different industry publications, maybe like Bloomberg magazine. So they're going to be, you know, responsible for making sure that people are aware, defining the message of, you know, who is this asset manager, what are they good at, how are they differentiated, all of that good stuff. But they're also going to be responsible for creating content that supports the salespeople. So they're going to be responsible for the website. They're going to be responsible for the fund data experiences that are in that website. So this is where we start to see how Katosis is part of this picture, because of course our platform enables their organization to quickly and easily build these experiences. So the fund management website is going to have sections on it which will have their list of funds for that fund center. It will have different stats about those funds, like what was their performance last month. It will have different key documents. So it may have regulatory documents, prospectuses, key investor information documents, fact sheets, that sort of thing. But it also may have marketing content on there as well, like who's the fund manager, how many years of experience do they have, where do they go to school, you know, what makes them a good manager of emerging market equity funds. They may have content written by the manager, their views on the market, the firm's views on the market from a chief economist. And so that website is, of course, the main receptacle of that content, and that marketing organization headed by the CMO is in charge of that and making sure that that is top-notch, giving the information to the people who use it. And remember, the users of these websites are the internal salespeople, having a conversation with a fund selection team, maybe an advisor, an institutional investor, a consultant, or those end people themselves looking, coming on to try and get information that they need about the products to include in their own modelling. So very much an information mart, if you will. They're also responsible for creating marketing collateral. So very commonly in our industry, you have a fact sheet, which tends to be a two-page document, which has an absolute plethora of information crammed into two sheets. You sometimes have longer documents called quarterly investment reviews or commentaries, which will have more text about the fund, how it's performing, how assets been allocated. And then from there, the same types of content that you see on those documents get included in other types of output. So sales presentations are also a place where they go. And those, of course, are things that salespeople will use to present to customers, but they'll have the same information in them. And so the picture you should start to build in your head is one where there is a huge amount of data which is being used in lots of different places. An added level of complexity for everyone involved in this is that if you recall back to the first lesson that I did, these entities are regulated. So that means that there is an organisation like the SEC, FINRA, the FCA, the CSSF in Europe, who is keeping an eye on these businesses to make sure that they are not making unrealistic promises or marketing their funds in a potentially illegal way. And so where the problems come in is if those numbers are wrong. So the CMO is responsible for the distribution of this data to the salespeople and to the end investors or to the people who are going to advise the end investor. And if the numbers are wrong, the company can get fined. And the fines are not small for serious infractions. So this is where I want you all to start to walk a mile in the shoes of the chief marketing officer of a fund. Because what you will find is that that chief marketing officer, unless they've been in this industry all their life and is completely numb to the pressure, will now be in a situation where their organisation can unwittingly commit a pretty serious compliance breach just in the normal course of their job, and it may or may not even be their fault. So when we think of chief marketing officers, we think about people who are creative, we think about people who, you know, want to have a blank, broad canvas to paint on. And of course, what we don't think about are people who are very, very worried about potential inaccuracies in their messaging. But of course, the life of a chief marketing officer and asset manager it's not like that. They are under a lot of pressure to make sure that they provide this critical sales enablement content quickly and accurately. And if they don't, they personally could be in a lot of trouble. From a career perspective, no one wants to preside over a failure in their job. Whether that's a small failure or a large failure, you don't want to preside over it. From your own career perspective, when you're in a peer group of senior executives as a CMO is, you don't want to be the person who the head of sales looks at and says, we always get our fact sheets late. Or the chief compliance officer says, these guys are always putting the wrong performance numbers out. And so they are the kind of the front line of where this stuff can go wrong. And they also have to do a really, really good job in supporting the salespeople. So it is a high-pressure job. Not only that, but improving their processes is very, very hard. I'll give you an example. So if you have a couple of hundred different fund products, which a lot of customers do, and that might mean, you know, 20 or 30 funds with different share classes. When you want to produce fact sheets for all of those, first of all, you're probably going to need a variant of that fact sheet for the different funds because you're going to show different data sets. So we talked about the difference between an equity fund and a fixed income fund. Well, the reporting's very different as well. There's a thing in fixed income called credit quality because, of course, you might lend money to different businesses that are less credit worthy than others. And so that's why we have credit ratings. Credit ratings, just an agency. It's a rating given by an agency that determines how likely you are to pay back your money. And so that's one of the things that an investor in a fixed income fund is going to want to know. How much of my money is in AAA versus BB? Because the BB is more likely to default. I need to know that. Versus if I'm in a equity fund, I might be more interested in how much of my money is in airlines in March 2020 because they're not going to fly for a very long time and they're probably going to go out of business or lose a lot of money. So they're different questions that are going to need to be answered by these documents. But for the chief marketing officer, that means you've got a lot of different templates, you've got a lot of different data that needs to be put into those templates. And in lots of cases, they need different disclaimers on them, different pieces of regulatory text. And again, if you get them wrong, you're in trouble. So change is hard, and change takes a long time. So there is a huge amount of inertia in these organizations. And it's created by a lack of automation, it's created by fear around compliance failures, and it's also pushed upon by the distribution organization who want to be the best. The distribution organization wants the best looking website, because who wants to go to their meeting with their customer in a polyester suit? No, they want to go in a beautiful Brioni wool suit. And they want to have a beautiful Audemars Piguet watch. They want to have all the trappings of success to project success. They don't want a terrible looking website that doesn't work, that is slow, where you can't find the information easily, because that indicates that you are not successful. And so the pressure for a CMO is very great because they have to innovate and improve the fortunes of the distribution organization whilst being responsible for a lot of potentially damaging stuff. So, within their org, heads of digital now are quite important. The people who do the print reporting side of things, you will tend to find if they don't have the head of client reporting underneath them, they will have teams that just do print reporting as well for the purposes of sales. So that, again, as I say, that may be siphoned off. But they will be responsible for creation of that collateral. But they're also going to be responsible for making sure that the types of experiences that they give these different persona types in their clients and in really within their constituents, because to say clients is a bit misleading, they're servicing people within their organisation and outside their organisation. So they need to think about, okay, what is it that a consultant wants from us when they come to visit us? What types of content can we put together to help them? What about an advisor? When you think about an advisor wants to know why they should recommend a product to their customers. How is it going to help their client in their asset allocation and achieving their goals? If they want to recommend it, how do they help sell it? Because, of course, everything needs to be sold. Everything needs to be described as to why it's suitable for someone. And so the CMO needs to make sure that they're creating personalized content for those different external constituent personas. So understanding who it is that they're selling to is important. What do they want? What do they feel? The kind of things that I'm describing for you now about the CMO, they need to know about their own clients. Very, very important. Their place in the hierarchy is definitely subordinate to the head of sales, head of distribution, however you want to describe it, the person who is responsible for the sales team. They are pretty much the top of the tree. Now, we can sell to them too, but it's a bit of a different sale because, of course, the people who are using the solution are in marketing. But talking to distribution teams is very useful because they have leverage. They are the people who are the end consumers of this content and of the effectiveness of the machine. They also sometimes have the teams within them that help on those pitch books, which again are another type of output that may be being done within their org. And so talking to distribution teams can be useful because they can more easily influence the rest of the organisation. But it's a different type of conversation that you're going to be having with them. To outline other parts of the org that we talk to, we certainly have an important potential ally in the technology team, but they can also be a potential enemy as well. And again, to understand why they're potentially an enemy, you have to understand the politics of the organisation and an asset manager. So technology teams tend to have large budgets, they tend to have a fair amount of people, and they're there to solve the business of the organisation's problems using tech. If you're providing something that is either going into their organisation without their involvement, that is seen to be weakening their position. So if you're ever in a situation where you have a customer champion and they have not engaged IT, not a good idea. You need to have the IT teams involved and you need to have them like you. They need to have them like your solution. They need to see how it fits into their architecture. Now versus 10 years ago, much easier conversation because 10 years ago cloud was a no-no, now it's everywhere. But you will need to make sure that the CTO sees this as something that improves their position, the CTO being the Chief Technology Officer. So you need to make sure that when you're selling to the CTO, you are talking about the security benefits of our platform, infrastructure, uptime, and stability of our platform. The psyche of the CTO, the position within the org, again, generally will report into the CEO, potentially the CMO, but very unlikely, more likely the CEO of the firm. And they're, of course, responsible for anything that's technology related. Generally, they've come in from a background of working in investments themselves, so they know trading systems and they know portfolio management, but when it comes to marketing and sales technology, not so much. But they still need to satisfy the needs of these organisations, subordinate again to the head of sales. So head of sales is the rainmaker. They need to make sure they're happy. Head of sales isn't happy, it's going to put them in a politically challenging situation. So you will find that they are going to be very keenly attuned to making sure that they can be part of a project that is going to help sales, or part of something that's going to help sales. They are allergic to projects that fail. You need to satisfy the IT teams, and in particular the CMO as well, that you are a sure thing. They know how long these projects can go. They know how they can fail. And if your name is attached to a project that fails, it's a bad thing for your career. So, in many ways, once you have sold the benefits of our solution, you're also needing to sell the fact that our solution is a low-risk proposition in all the ways that they might perceive it to be risky. So how long is it going to take to implement? If you say a year, the cone of uncertainty that a year-long project extends to is huge. There are lots of things that can go wrong in a year. If a vendor thinks it's going to take a year, that means that there's a lack of standardization there. Probably going to require some custom coding. Probably going to have QA issues. An experienced technologist is going to know that. And that's why we're focused on making sure that our solution is demonstrably deliverable within a 3-month period. And a lot of that is actually down to conversations with the customer. So that is something that is very important for them to understand and how we achieve that. The security aspect of things is important because, of course, because they're financial services institutions, they have money, and it's other people's money. So they need to give the impression that that money is safe. If your website gets hacked, then there is an inductive proof to be had there where your investors might say, well, if the website can be hacked, what else is wrong. It could be as simple as a data breach, people's social security numbers, conversations being leaked from CRM, or it could be something much worse. So data security is important. Again, because these types of technology teams have come from banks, they are schooled in doing things well. So they will want to know that you adhere to the best practices of the banking industry. So when you make changes to your stack, or even to a site or to a document, are they able to test that in a development environment, to stage it with users in a staging environment and then promote it to production, the kind of things that you do in banking apps. Do you have the kind of security protocols like single sign-on or two-factor authentication to prevent unwanted interlopers getting into your systems? There's a huge array of these things, and of course we have a dedicated team internally that both checks them, pioneers new techniques, and also has these conversations with our customers and has documented our responses to them. But back to the persona, a very, very risk-averse persona in the CTO, someone who is responsible for keeping stability within the business, but also has the pressure of innovation and making sure that people like the head of distribution are enabled. So the forward-thinking CTO is going to do all of those things, and it's going to have a good balance. But remember that, as with all senior people, they have gained the position they have in their career through hard work, and probably not a small amount of political wrangling to get where they are. And they are paid quite well. And when you're paid quite well, the chances of getting another job that pays as well, if you fail, are reduced. So you do tend to find that there's a pretty decent amount of risk mitigation going on within all of the C-suite. So you need to be a surefire bet. You need to remove any of those objections, because they are not going to do things that they do not have 100% conviction as solving the problem that they have and doing it in a way that is going to make them look good. The other thing to remember about the CTO is that more and more their technology organizations are not about building technology, they're about integrating technology. Because particularly within our industry, the fee pressure has created a push towards only focusing the asset manager on the core business of managing money. So if there's a system that helps them manage money better, then of course they can buy it. They can buy Aladdin, it's a BlackRock system or a BlackRock originated system used by lots of the big asset managers. You can buy Aladdin, you're not going to build a better system than Aladdin. But you may be able to have a better ESG process, and so therefore let's build a system to manage our ESG data. Great, that would be within the wheelhouse. But of course they would be encouraged to find solutions out there for it. What they need to do though is integrate all these systems together. So it's much, much more common that a CTO is assembling technology fit for purpose and connecting it together. And so that's where our APIs become a very important selling factor for a CTO. The ability to integrate it into a data warehouse very easily, demonstrating that other asset managers have done it easily and quickly. We have some great stories. A good one is about Bank of Montreal. They have a system called Market EDM, which is a data warehouse. They did their data integration with us in 2 weeks because they were able to just simply push the data out of it and into our APIs. So being part of their ecosystem in a way that they can plug into us and have a role is also something critical, because it gives them psychologically the association with the success of the project. Again, these are not things you're going to say to the prospect or the customer, but just so you understand the mentality of them and how they will think. So we skipped over the head of distribution a little bit here. I think whilst they are not necessarily going to be the economic buyer, because of course their role in the company is to manage the sales, people manage the relationships. If they can buy a piece of software that immediately makes their team successful, great. But a lot of the time, they're outsourcing that to the marketing team or the technology team. So they're a great way in the door, but you should understand the mentality. The mentality is very simple. The same mentality that you as salespeople have. You want to sell as much as possible in as short a time as possible. And you want to look great in front of your customers, and you want to have the absolute best experience. You want to walk out of every meeting knowing that you crushed it. But to understand the psychology of it, I think is pretty easy. But understanding the people that they work with gives you an even deeper level of understanding. Really good example is on our website, on our blogs page, there's a chat that Mash did with a guy that used to be the head of fund selection for UniCredit. Jean-François Audemil, I think his name is. And in that conversation, one of the things that he talks about is how, when he was doing that job, he could have filled every hour of his day with a meeting with a salesperson from a mutual fund company. The reason for that is because, of course, if someone said to you, hey, salesperson at Katosis, would you like to have a meeting every single hour of your day with every single asset manager in the world? Of course, you say, yes, of course, I'll take it. But of course, the salespeople at the fund managers are no different. They want to go out there and distribute their products. So they want to be selling to these fund selection teams. These are the guys and gals that do the selection of the fund products to go on the shelf for the advisors to sell. The other thing he said, though, is how often do they turn up and they don't have a clue about what they're talking about? And why don't they have a clue? They don't have a clue because they don't understand their products well enough, probably because they aren't enabled well enough, because they don't have the content in their hands to talk about the products. And so oftentimes the meetings were a bit of a waste because they couldn't answer the questions. So having a strong and educated sales force is critical. So they're worried about making sure that the supporting collateral is there so that their teams can be educated in their conversations with their customers. They want to make sure that the performance is good, but of course the CIO is going to take care of that, chief investment officer and the portfolio managers. They can only work with what they've got. And so the importance of the enabling technologies to them is critical because it prevents a veneer, but the veneer extends into how the salespeople can converse with the client. So the enabling content and the enabling technology is very, very important to them. So those are the three main groups. When it comes to client reporting, there are generally client reporting groups that are separate. And these will deal with the after-sale care for generally institutional clients, but also for other types of clients as well. They might be responsible for things like, in Europe, the key investor information documents. But they'll be responsible for custom reporting that's been promised to a large institution. That's a common thing as well, that a large institution will say, I will give you a large amount of money, but you have to give me reporting in this format going forward because that's how I get it from all my other managers. So there are teams that do a lot of that reporting after sale on an ongoing basis, very much like the team who does the sales presentations. And of course, it's slow and uses the same data and it's painful and blah, 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 blah. And if you do it wrong, you know, your clients get annoyed and then they don't like you as much. And when it comes to chopping some of your managers, they might decide to chop you because you've got a better relationship with someone else. So it's a competition to make sure that you are as effective as possible in communicating with those customers. Their angle there is very much about efficiency. If you can make them able to produce the content quicker, then the sales team are going to be happier because their conversations with the customer are going to be less about how rubbish you are at reporting and more about product. And the sales team tend to get the backlash of that. So again, when you think about the hierarchy of the org, head of client reporting might report into the CIO, they might report into the CEO. But who are they subordinate to in the pyramid of life? The salespeople are where a lot of the pressure comes from. So you see how a lot of this is about subordinating to the sales teams and making the sales teams happy because they are on the front line of relationship management with the customer. So it might well be that, you know, the fact sheets don't come out, you know, at the right point every month. They're getting their fact sheets out on the 12th and other funds are getting them out on the 5th. And that embarrasses the sales team. So a lot of that pressure rolls up to the sun god of the head of distribution. Now, within these orgs, once you understand the motivators, you have to ask, well, how the hell am I going to get in there and start to tell them about how we can help them? And how can we help them? What are the solutions I'm going to talk about? And how am I going to position that? The good news is that there are lots of different levels within these orgs, from the lowest associate level up to the chief, unquestionably, it is most effective to go in at the sea level, if you can get it. But of course, getting a conversation with those people can be challenging. So it tends to be easier to get a connection with someone like a head of digital than it is to get a connection to a CMO. They have delegated a lot of that responsibility out to their head of digital. But if you're at a trade show and you see a CMO and you're able to get a conversation going with them, there is nothing better. If you're able to get a head of distribution, there's nothing better. If a head of distribution says do something, invariably it's done. So you can see how going in at the top can be a very effective strategy, but if you're shut down, you're going to have to go back and work your way up. So understanding the structure, CMO, head of digital, somebody who may be in charge of web, somebody who may be in charge of marketing automation, on the print side, you know, someone who's overall in charge of all print production, or someone who's just in charge of fact sheets or in charge of a particular output, sales support team. Mapping out these organizations and getting a good picture of all the people to talk to, and then making sure that you're tailoring your message to that individual person, is very important in terms of getting in the door and understanding what are the individual pain points of each one. So a head of digital. Head of digital, it's all about digital marketing. It's all about making things look great, but it's all about making things really, really effective. So taking the thought leadership of the company and espousing the virtues of their products at the speed of the market through the digital channel. What are the things that ail them? What are the things that are painful about that? Well, I can tell you that one of the things that are painful about that is the data, getting the data into the website, getting it in there in a way that is considered to be industry leading. So we call that those data bits the fun buying experience. Fun buying experience is a term that we invented, but people understand what it means. It means the parts of that web experience that are to do with people who are buying or selling funds. So someone comes in, an advisor, they want to sell a fund in Europe, they need to go and get the kid and put that in front of their customers. The key is the key investor information document, it's a regulatory document. They're going to be able to find that quickly. What's the journey on the website to find that? Do you go into a page and it spins for 20 seconds before coming up, or is it really quick and easy to find? Is it optimized so that the products that are most commonly viewed and invested in are right there on the homepage, so you can just quickly get to the information you need? That's part of the head of digital's job, is to make sure that that whole experience is crisp and clean. And of course, there's lots of ways to get that wrong. So you've got to get the data from where it sits in technology. You've got to get that into something called an API. But API, lots of people try to use it. It's just like a very small door with lots of people trying to go through it. People get blocked and they can't go through. The net effect being, on a website, without my analogy, the website slows down. There's lots of these little things that the organisation needs to build which aren't part of their core capabilities. And so we come along and say, well, just send us your data and some files and we'll give you an API because our platform has an API in it. Job done. And by the way, whenever you send us that data, we're going to keep a copy of whatever you send us. So if someone asks you, oh, hi, it's John from Compliance. I've had a complaint from one of your customers saying that the performance was wrong last week. You can go in and see. You can actually see what the performance was. We'll even take a picture of the web page for you to show you. And that's a regulatory requirement. So we solved that problem. Now we want to make a fund centre that is absolute best practice, that's got all the features, bells and whistles that people want to use in order to discover your products. So, good example, downloading holdings. Lots of advisors download holdings. They want to see what actual securities are invested into, and then they take that information and they look at other funds and they make sure that they don't have investments into the same securities, or they have diversification. Very, very important part of the journey. Most asset managers bury it 3 or 4 pages down into their site. In our fund center, you stick it right on the fund center so people can download it quickly. So things like that, where they are both best practices in this industry, but also something that the client, they don't need to do any coding to get it. They just come in, we configure it for them in the studio, and they can have that module. And that gives them both certainty, they know how long it's going to be delivered. They know it's not going to be a white elephant project that fails, because they can touch it from day one. So they know from a career perspective, they're going to be getting the absolute best fund buying experience on their website, but they don't have to worry about it being a complete failure. All they've got to do is chuck it to data, which is, you know, it can be challenging for some, but a lot of the risk is removed. It goes deeper than that, though. Take an example in Europe with UCITS funds. It's very common in Europe to have different websites for different countries, and so you end up with 50 different websites sometimes. Sometimes with the same content on them. You might have an About Us page that says, hey, welcome to AlphaGen Asset Management. We have $300 billion under management. And that page is in 60 different websites. If you update the AUM on one, and you forget to update it on the others, you're in a compliance breach scenario. That's just one example of where content can create breach. It creates career risk for the head of digital. It could also be a blog post where someone's made a performance claim, and that blog post can't be up for more than 60 days. Well, that content needs to automatically expire. So we have modules in our system that will allow you to set a date on it and take the page down when the content is too old, and even modules where you can actually take the content and share them out to those other sites. So these are just a few examples of how our system speaks to the kind of challenges that a particular persona has in their job, and lowers their career risk, increases their chance for promotion, but ultimately facilitates the business of the org raising their assets, because they have to do this stuff anyway. It's just really hard and really expensive, fraught with danger. We make all of that go away. So in the future sessions, we're going to delve more into these individual personas and start to connect the features of the platform to the value that they derive. But never lose sight in your mind that everyone involved in this chain here is about selling products. It's about retaining the investments in those products and making sure that that is done with the lowest level of risk possible to the business because of the trepidatious nature of asset management in a regulated industry with heavy, heavy fines for failure. And also remember that for lots of our clients, they're doing this across the globe in different markets with different requirements, in different languages, dealing with people of different cultures. And all of that makes this a high-stakes game of poker that we can severely limit the risks of loss on and severely increase the chances of walking away from that table considerably richer than you went to it. And that is, at its core, what our business is about.